I'm Gabe Ortiz, afternoon host at WIPR. Federal funding for public radio is under serious threat. An end to that funding would make the live streams like this one more difficult to maintain. Stand up for public media and help fortify WIPR's future. Find out more and donate at WIPR.org. Thank you.
Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. My first guest today is Baltimore City Council President Zeke Cohen, who stops by every few weeks to update us on issues the council is working on. And the council president joins us in Studio B. Good to see you. Welcome back.
Always good to see you, Tom.
So let's talk first about this story that was broken by our news partner, the Baltimore Banner, an audit of autopsies done by the medical examiner who was here for 20-some years, a guy named David Fowler. Found as many as 36 deaths in police custody should have been classified as homicides, not all of them in Baltimore City, but a good portion of them here in the city over, you know, as I say, a 20-year period. What's the next step as you understand it? Will the council itself be involved in any direct way?
Yeah, I'll just begin by acknowledging that, you know, this is a really hard finding for those 36 families to have clear and present evidence, and many of them believed it all along. I think about Tawanda Jones and Tyrone West case. I think about the Anton Black case. But to have this audit that now shows somewhat definitively that this gentleman was biased and that he was wrong in his findings, I think is really powerful and just really disturbing. Again, this is the same, I will remind your listeners, this is the same medical examiner who thought that Derek Chauvin, in his case, was also should not have been considered a murder of George Floyd.
He testified in that trial.
Correct. And so in terms of the next steps here, I
and
know—
We should point out that the bias is towards the police.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. And again, many of these cases, some of them in Baltimore City, some of them in Baltimore County and just throughout the state, you know, where you had families that said loud and clear, you know, this was a homicide, this is a murder, and in many cases they were ignored. I know there is conversation at the state level about the statute of limitations, about potentially do you reopen some of these cases. I know for us on the council, we are in the posture of listening and trying to understand the full ramifications. A lot of the legalities are going to play out, I think, at the state level. And again, grateful to the attorney general and to the governor for the diligence and making this audit a priority. At the end of the day, people deserve justice and they deserve to know what really happened.
Yeah, and of course, we will continue to follow it. And our partners at the Banner are doing some great reporting on it as well. Let's talk about housing. There's a package of bills, five bills, meant to change zoning regulations that will putatively help address the shortage of housing that we have in the city and help also address the problem of vacants, which is improving incrementally. There are fewer vacant properties now than there were 4 or 5 years ago by a factor of a couple of thousand, depending on how you count them. But outline for us what the council is considering. Some of these bills were considered as recently as last year. Ryan Dorsey, councilman, proposed some ideas that didn't make it, that were shot down pretty quickly last year. What's different this time around?
Well, I think, frankly, Tom, what is different is that there's a different city council president in me, and that I have a very different view from my predecessor about the need for us to actively grow our population in the city of Baltimore. The reality, Tom, is that we cannot remain stagnant as a city. We need to grow our tax base. We used to be close to 1 million people. We're now down under 600,000, and we have got to grow. And we've got to acknowledge that there is a national housing shortage. This is facing every city in America. And this is one of those issues where we can blame the federal government and Trump all we want, but we actually do have some control and some agency over what we do. And for Mayor Scott and for myself, and I believe for Councilman Dorsey, the sweet spot that we are trying to find is that we want to grow Baltimore's population, but not displace a whole bunch of working people that help build this city. And I don't know that any other city in America has successfully done that. When you look at California or DC or New York or any of these places that have grown rapidly, there's been a whole lot of displacement that has not been good for working class people. And so our goal is both to grow and also, to your point about vacants, to keep folks here who are Baltimoreans through and through. What do these bills actually do, I think was your question. So there's a couple things.
A lot of them have to do with the density of housing. I know Ryan Dorsey's understanding, and also Mayor Scott has some bills that he's personally suggesting to be able to increase the density, the number of people in individual houses.
Correct. And you should have Councilman Dorsey on at some point to
go through in detail. That's in the works.
Each one of his bills. But the larger sort of premise here is one is about reforming single staircase. For the longest time, buildings have that are attempting to be converted into residential from commercial there's a need for you to have multiple staircases. And this would change the zoning code to enable buildings to be converted and to do residential and to be taller, that you could have one ingress egress. Important to note that the fire department supports this bill and that it has not created a fire hazard. One of the bills is about eliminating parking minimums. I think Councilman Blanchard is supporting that one. The reality is that in a lot of our zoning currently, we've eliminated the need for parking space in each apartment, but this would take it one step further. And I want to be clear to your listeners that it does not mean that developers are not going to build parking. Where the market calls for it, there will absolutely be parking. And I think that's a important thing to put out.
Yeah, because when people hear density in our town that has really inadequate public transportation,
correct,
let's be honest about that, people have cars. And
right.
You have 10 new apartments on your block. That could be potentially 10 or 15 or 20 new cars if a husband and wife are there and they're, each of them has a car. And so people freak out about parking the minute they hear density.
Yeah, and I want to be crystal clear again, Tom, that it is not eliminating parking where developers see the need for it, where the market demands parking. They're still going to build parking. It just eliminates the government requirement. And parking is expensive. And it, in many cases, excess parking could go into creating new housing. And the idea here, Tom, as you and I were talking about before the show, we've talked about how difficult it is to get grocery stores in neighborhoods. Well, when you have a dense community where there are enough feet on the street, there's enough people with resources, that's when retail grocery stores want to move in. And so that's really the goal here, is to create thriving communities. The mayor's bill that Mayor Scott is sponsoring would change the zoning code to enable single family houses to be, in some cases, two family houses. So if you have a big row house in West Baltimore, you could potentially create a separate unit for your aging parent. You could create a unit for your child who is grown but is living with the family. It acknowledges that our families right now, in a lot of cases where we're seeing the boomer generation start to retire, in many cases, it makes a lot of sense for people to age in place and move in with their kids. And it creates a whole separate zoning category to enable us to do that, whereas now we can't.
410-662-8780. If you have a question for City Council President Zeke Cohen, it's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Of course, the zoning revisions need to go hand in hand with permit The permit process and that being improved. There's been, you know, talk about that. You and I have talked about it. So give us a sense of the timing of both of those efforts, because if we get developers with the opportunity to, reconfigure some of these homes for more people, they're going to need permits to do that. And if they have to wait months and months and months, that's going to put a damper on this.
No, Tom, idea. You're absolutely right. Look, at the end of the day, government just needs to work, and we need to enable the market to be built, and then we need to get out of the way. And when you have developers telling us it takes me 18 months to pull a very basic permit, that's unacceptable. The mayor has a very aggressive vacant housing plan. He wants to rebuild our entire vacant housing stock. We can't do that with a completely dysfunctional permitting system. That's why I'm grateful to Chairman James Torrance and Councilmember Odette Ramos. We held a hearing on permitting reform not too long ago where we had the Deputy Mayor, Justin Williams, present his Be More Fast plan, where there are a number of reforms that he's talked about doing. One that we honed in on is there's a big bottleneck at the fire marshal's office. You'll hear this all the time. It takes forever to get your plans reviewed, or it takes forever to get an inspection. So in this current budget, the fire chief has put in for some new pins, some new allocation for some new inspectors. And we've also started to have conversations about third-party plans review, which would take some of the burden off of the fire department to do that review. But your premise is exactly right, which is it is critically important that we reform the permitting system and people be able to build.
Do you see these things moving forward in the council in tandem?
I do.
And give us a sense of the timeline for, you know, this package of five zoning bills and the permit bills. I mean, is this something that can be accomplished in how many months?
Look, I think that it is there is a balance in that, especially with these zoning bills, which we know are going to have some pushback and are going to be controversial. We want to do the diligence. We want to listen and make sure communities have an opportunity to weigh in. That was something that the mayor said when we announced them, is that he's going to be doing a listening tour on the bill that he proposed. But I would say on the other end of it is we have to have a sense of urgency. We have to move quickly on this. We're not going to get to thousands of vacant houses if it takes forever to pull a permit. So my goal is fast. And by fast, I mean within 6 months, 8 months, to see some real true progress on both permitting reform and housing reform. And again, this is a place, Tom, where Baltimore can lead the country. Cities are not doing well. You can read the book Abundance by Ezra Klein. Cities are not building at the appropriate rate. Baltimore can be the one that says, you know what, we've had some antiquated processes. We've constricted ourselves through our zoning code, but we are going to be aggressive in rebuilding our population without displacing a whole bunch of working people.
We have a caller on line one. Moe is joining us. Welcome to the program with Council President Zeke Cohen.
Hi, my name's Moe. I live in Baltimore City, and I moved here a couple years ago from Oregon, where I worked on a lot of campaigns and projects to try to increase livability while increasing density at the same time. And I'm really glad to hear that these bills are moving forward here, and that anti-displacement is a really important centerpiece of how you're looking at all of it. So thank you so much. And one sort of question or comment around the urgency aspect would be, the new comprehensive plan was adopted last year, and I wonder how this all fits into that.
Okay, thanks for the call. Appreciate it, and welcome to town. Mr. Council President, what do you think?
Yeah, welcome to the neighborhood, Moe. Glad to have you here. So it absolutely builds on the comprehensive plan that was adopted last year. It's important for listeners to understand that the direction most cities are heading in right now is an acknowledgement that our zoning codes have been, in many cases, overly restrictive. And that's not to say that there isn't a situation. I hear it a lot when I was District 1 councilman, where we want to be thoughtful about what gets built in a neighborhood. People don't want some kind of inappropriate structure. But it is to say that when we restrict the supply of housing, we are limiting who can live in a neighborhood, and we're also limiting the amenities that that neighborhood will get. So I do think these things absolutely build on themselves.
We have an email from Melissa who says, to grow the city, we need to think about schools. In 2020, Mayor Scott said that he'd direct the Department of Planning to work with city schools on revising boundaries, but it hasn't happened. We've rezoned council districts and police districts. What is the council doing on equitable school rezoning?
Yeah, it's a fair question, Melissa. So I would say this is an issue that I think our school board is going to need to take up. I think that a lot of their energy and focus, from what I can understand right now, is on the CEO search and trying to determine who is going to replace Dr. Santelices at the end of her contract. But I do think the point is well taken that school boundaries, schools really matter when someone is deciding whether to stay in a neighborhood, whether to buy a house. And so taking a good hard look at school boundaries is important. And I think that's work that I know this school board is up to.
Let's go back to the phones. Brian is on the line from Highlandtown. Welcome to the program with City Council President Zeke Cohen.
Hi, Zeke. Hi, Tom. We've heard a lot of talk about streamlining the permitting process for construction and for homes and the like. What I don't hear a lot of talk about is streamlining the process for small businesses that want to come into the city. Oftentimes, a small business person will not properly understand what permits they need, what the next steps are. And I would like a concierge office or something to shepherd these processes through so we could have more small businesses move into our city.
Okay, appreciate the comment. So, a one-stop shop for a small business that wants to open, get the permits done, figure out the tax consequences, et cetera.
Yeah, no. First off, Brian, thank you for your leadership in Highlandtown and for all that you do. It is good to hear from you, and you're absolutely right. It is about streamlining processes, not just to build more housing, but to create a more small business, local business friendly climate in the city of Baltimore. Look, we are seeing right now that having an economy that is so heavily focused on feds, eds, and meds has some vulnerabilities and challenges. We have an administration in Washington, D.C. that is extremely hostile to its own federal government, to research, to medicine, to education, to all of these things. And so shifting our own focus internally so that we are more small business friendly, so that we're better about permitting, not just on the housing side, but for community-based businesses that want to open up, I think is really, really, really important.
Is there anything currently in place that's kind of sort of like that? You know, if I wanted to open a small business, what should my first phone call be?
Yeah, so there's a few different things. There's the BDC, the Baltimore Development Corporation, which is transitioning leadership. It was Colin, who was the leader for a very long time, did a good job.
Colin Tarbert.
Yep, Tarbert brought CFG Arena. Mm-hmm. So the BDC has always been traditionally a good place for that. There's also an organization, an agency in the city called, and I'm going to not be able to produce the acronym, but SMBAD, the Small Minority Business. I'm sorry.
It exists. People can find it. Yeah.
And it's for small businesses. Folks should check it out. But Brian's premise is right. I think there is more streamlining that we can do to make Baltimore a small and local business friendly city. I know there's a lot of work downtown to try to improve our business community, but absolutely making sure it's easier to do it is critically important.
And I know you and others, members of the council, were at a taxpayer night last night. You heard from constituents. We want to make sure you have a chance to hear from some here on midday. And we just have about a minute left. Let's go to Susan, who will be our last caller in Baltimore. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, Tom. Hi, President. My question is related to the condition of the roads infrastructure, which is, frankly, fairly deplorable all around the city and affects our ability, I think, to retain citizens and residents. And so I was wondering, is there a city council master plan, if you will, or vision for how we can improve the infrastructure of our roads and traffic system?
And we should have some infrastructure help from the, you know, the erstwhile Biden administration. That bill got passed a long time ago.
Yeah, it sure did. And, you know, it was great to have a president that understood that investing in infrastructure is about investing in people. Unfortunately, that's not what we're seeing currently. I would say there is.
But that money that was approved under the Biden bill, the infrastructure bill, is that in danger of not coming? Is Trump going to be able to hold that?
I would say that with this president, the only certainty is uncertainty. So I don't want to directly answer that question.
But we haven't heard anything specific.
Haven't heard anything specifically. Mm-hmm. I would agree with Susan's premise, but I would also say to Susan and others that, look, in addition to improving our roads, we have to improve public transportation in this town. There's a lot of conversation about kids getting to school on time that – there have been studies. There's the Banner has done a piece on it. So I think it is a both and question. I want to see the red line happen sometime in my lifetime. The governor committed to it. Unfortunately, we don't have federal support on that from what we've seen right now, but we have to do both.
Zeke Cohen is the president of the Baltimore City Council. It's good to see you, sir, and we'll see you again soon.
Always good, Tom. Thank you, man.
And coming up, a Preakness preview with a look ahead to what's in store for the renovation of the Pimlico racetrack. Frank Vespi of the Racing Biz joins me on the other side of a quick break. But before we go to that break, each week here on Midday, as listeners to the program know, it's our practice to read the names of people who've lost their lives to violence in Baltimore City and to list their names on the Midday webpage. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths and to remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 46 people have been identified as victims of homicide in our city. Police have identified 4 people who were killed last week. They are Rashard Smith, age 21, Terrence Todd, age 47, Troy Gagler, age 34, and John Lewis. He was 15 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.